Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
As the oil churns,
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. It seems we're at a crucial point with the price of oil. A couple more drops like we had on Friday, and the economy could really get a lift. So many industries are hamstrung by energy costs. So many people are on tight budgets for the same reason. Oil is at $115 a barrel this morning. Gas prices have dropped 15 cents the last 2 weeks to $3.70 a gallon on average. With healthcare, there's no reason to think prices will come down anytime soon. People debate whether the government should do more. Well, a study out this morning says taxpayers already fork over $60 billion a year to cover the uninsured, and that it would take roughly three times that amount to cover everybody. Renina Jablonski has more.
Jack Hadley is the lead author of the study in today's web edition of Health Affairs, a health policy journal.
The main implication is that the longer we wait to expand insurance coverage, the more costly it's going to be.
He says the tab for the uninsured is a lot higher than the last time he did this kind of math, back in 2001. That's because there are more uninsured people, they're older, and the cost of health care keeps going up. He says reforming the system now has benefits beyond cost.
Greater labor market efficiency, possibly less burden on employers to provide insurance. There's significant national loss that comes from not covering the uninsured.
Hadley says Americans without insurance will spend $30 billion out of pocket this year. I'm Renita Jablonski for Marketplace.
Wall Street just opened for business. Let's do a quick check. So far, the Dow is down 95 points to 11,527. The NASDAQ is down 23, and the S&P 500 has fallen 10. In Asia today, the Nikkei finished up almost 2%. Hong Kong shares climbed more than 3%. There are rumblings this morning about a government bailout of Fannie and Freddie. Nothing official yet. But last week, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke said the bailout of Bear Stearns might have set a dangerous precedent. If some institutions are too big to fail, investors could get reckless.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine joins us. Alan, you call the Fed's strategy here play and pray. What does that mean?
That means you play for time and you pray for the markets to change and help things. The idea is you try to keep every major institution afloat, like the investment banks, like Fannie Mae, like Freddie Mac. You keep them afloat, which they've done in some very ingenious ways. And sooner or later, the market in home prices and other things will turn. And then the profits of these institutions that have been playing for time ought to make up for a lot of the capital losses that they've had. And you try not to close, you know, any major player, and you just wait until the world changes.
All right. Well, that's involving the major players. What about the minor players who are getting crushed in the meantime?
Well, that's their problem. Now, this is not my answer.
Right.
This is not how I would run the world. But that's the corollary to if you save the big players, the little guys, well, you can't save everybody, and good luck to them. We've already seen that in the mortgage business, right, where zillions and zillions of mortgage companies have croaked. Small to mid-size banks are now starting to have serious problems and are going to be closed and are allowed to fail. But the real giants, barring some catastrophe, are not going to be closed.
Right. But bottom line here, do you support this kind of strategy?
I don't see what else there is to do. I support it half-heartedly because in my ideal world, the managers who ran these companies into these problems would be publicly humiliated, sent out to the wilderness with what I call the brand of Cain on them, and stripped of all of their bonuses they got from profits that turned out to be non-existent. I mean, that's what I would like to do, but I don't think anybody has any intention of doing that. Right now, they just want to keep it alive and deal with things later.
All right, Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine. Thanks.
My pleasure, Scott.
This is the Morning Report for Monday, August 25th on Marketplace.org. Here's today's Did You Know question. Did you know that a riding lawnmower can emit as much smog as 34 cars? The government wants companies that make lawnmowers to do something about this. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
The Environmental Protection Agency is close to finalizing new rules to cut emissions from mowers by 35%. Manufacturers fought the reductions for years, but they had a change of heart when retailers showed interest in cleaner mowers. Chris Kaiser's with the Outdoor Power Equipment Institute. He welcomes the new standards.
We believe them to be fair and achievable, and our members will meet or exceed them.
Kaiser says they'll do that with better fuel efficiency and catalytic converters that reduce emissions. The California Air Resources Board estimates the changes will boost the price of some mowers by 18%. But those higher costs could be offset by the benefits of cleaner air. Frank O'Donnell's with Clean Air Watch.
They will prevent premature death. They will prevent sickness.
The EPA says total public health savings from the new rules could top $3 billion. The agency expects to issue the standards next month. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
The world's biggest hotel chain has a bit of a PR problem this morning. 8 million people who stayed at Best Western hotels in Europe may have been exposed to identity theft. Our European correspondent Stephen Beard reports.
British press reports say that hackers penetrated Best Western's European online reservation system late last week. It's claimed they stole names, home addresses, and credit card details. Some of that data has reportedly been put up for sale on a website run by the Russian mafia. The haul could include every online booking at a Best Western hotel in Europe over the past year, up to 8 million guests. One of them is himself a computer security expert. Professor Lachlan McKinnon says he's very concerned about the possible theft of his identity.
It's the sort of thing that might result in them using that information to set up a fraudulent identity to be involved in illicit activities, which I would not wish myself to be associated with. That's the bit that we really have to be concerned about, where we see criminal organisations funding this kind of activity.
In a statement on its British website, Best Western says the reports of a security breach are grossly unsubstantiated and there's no evidence of a need for widespread concern. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The Olympic torch has barely gone cold, and people are already talking about the next Summer Games in London. Well, people in London are talking about it anyway, mainly because London is already a truly expensive city, and hosting an Olympics could be considered something of a boondoggle. Christopher Worth has this from London.
Already, the bulldozers are roaring away in London. The clock is ticking for 2012, and the meter is running. Bob Cotton is chairman of the Tourism Alliance. He says the Olympics are a great opportunity, but the official price tag for hosting the Games has had a funny way of going up and up.
£9 billion, £10 billion, £12 billion. Who knows what the real figure is?
At last count, the budget was already four times the original estimate, and that has some Londoners questioning whether officials also miscalculated the £2.2 billion the Games are predicted to generate in tourism. Tom Jenkins is with the European Tour Operators Association. He says that hosting the games isn't the big payday it's cracked up to be.
It's a party. For goodness sake, we've got to have a good party if we're spending £10 billion on it. But after the party, you clean up, you pay the bills, you get on with your life. Stop saying, there's going to be some benefit from hosting this event, because there isn't.
Jenkins cites a report comparing previous host cities that shows the Olympics actually hurt tourism. It scares people away. So instead of saying,
come to London in 2012,
vacationers are feeling more like,
it's going to be crowded, it's going to be expensive, this isn't the year to go to that city.
The effects can last for up to 2 years after the Games. Beijing already felt the pinch. Hotels there were much emptier than expected. And Cotton says the industry has to think bigger. For him, the Olympics are about more than just London. It's about advertising the brand of Britain while the world is watching.
And there are going to be 19,000 journalists. They don't want to cover the Games for 20 days solid. What you want to do is find things for those journalists to do and write positive stories about every aspect of British life which could appeal to a future tourist.
He says that could mean anything from hiking in the mountains to surfing off the coast of Cornwall. You know, I've always wanted to hang ten. In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
Before the Olympics, as you know, China shut down a lot of smog-belching factories around Beijing. Now that the Games are over, the question is, do those factories reopen? Our correspondent in Shanghai, Scott Tong, is here with us. Scott, will they?
Maybe not. Optimists as far as air quality are hoping that what will happen is the dirtiest, most polluting guys are actually going to stay closed forever. And that some of the green energy, the alternative wind power and solar power that were introduced to the world at the Olympics, those will stay on forever. And that obviously would have a long-term positive impact on everyone downwind from China, Japan, South Korea, California, etc.
Right. And I would think it would also have an impact on the price of oil, wouldn't it?
Well, that's right. In the long term, what Beijing is trying to do is to become more energy efficient, and that may reduce China's demand for fossil fuels. In the immediate term, China is slowing down, and that could also get reflected in the price of crude oil.
Well, the Chinese government is talking about a stimulus package to spark the economy, and I know it's slowing down, but it had been so red hot before, they wanted it to slow down.
Well, let's put China slowing down in a little bit of perspective. We were running at more than 11% in China last year. And now we're talking about 10%, maybe even 9%. Beijing is not going to be mailing out checks to families as the U.S. Congress did. But what they are going to do is the government is going to spend some more on infrastructure development, etc. They're going to cut taxes and hopefully stay in their 9 or 10% economic growth range, which is what the government wants to keep going.
All right, Scott Tong in Shanghai, thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.